Hi, this is Larry H. Russell with a message on behalf of the network. As the leading online provider of audio-video coverage of the Boston Celtics, CLNS Radio delivers fans the most provocative discussion and analysis from the most noted personalities in the Celtics realm of the World Wide Web. Home to the number one rated weekly podcast which covers the NBA's winningest franchise, Celtics Beat is released first thing every Sunday morning. We deliver the hottest of takes and get the lowdown on all things Celtics from players, league executives, and the biggest names in the national basketball media. And it doesn't end there. The original Celtics podcasters John Duke and Justin Poulin have returned. Available Mondays on CLNSradio.com. Celtics Stuff Live is back and better than ever before with featured guests that are the most familiar voices to Celtics Nation. Basketball in Boston is heating up and you don't want to miss any of this. Download the CLNS Radio mobile app now. Available for your iPhone and Android.
Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it. Got it! 8 tenths of a second to go!
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
What happened here? Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
That about sums it up, I think. We have plenty of time to discuss. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome on in to the CLNS Radio Celtics post-game show. My name is Matt Rury, and I am here with my regular co-host, Calvin Chamberlain. Hello, Calvin. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. After this blowout loss by the Celtics down in Atlanta in Game 2, they lose 89-72 to the Atlanta Hawks. And Calvin and I are here to talk to you about it, if you feel like it, at 347-215-7771. That is the SeatGeek toll-free call-in number, so please give us a call if you feel like it tonight. Although, you know what, Calvin, after that game, if nobody calls in, I would not be surprised. The Celtics just, again, came out very flat. They looked horrible in the first quarter, actually setting a NBA shot clock era record low, 7 points in the first quarter for the Boston Celtics tonight. They just couldn't buy a bucket. And right from the beginning, much like in Game 1, they were down by 10-plus, 15-plus, 20-plus points in that first quarter. And it was just it was uphill from there, but they couldn't climb all the way back, losing by 17. Brutal.
Right, yeah, this game was never close. There were a couple of times where they seemed like they were about to make a run, but they never quite could. Like you said, just a brutal game all the way around. I mean, if you want to look at bad guys, well, I don't even know where to start here. There's a million places we could begin. I guess we should begin with that first quarter. They did get outscored 24-7. You know, let's start with the positives because there's so many negatives here. I feel like I'm an optimistic guy. Let's talk about a few positive things right out of the game, right? Amir Johnson, right? Great, excellent game. Great defense, particularly on Millsap. Pretty much shut him down completely.
Mm-hmm.
Also defended Horford well. I actually thought he should have played more. I know all these positives are just going to turn back into negatives.
I know. All these positives, I'm just going to flip it on you and say that the problem is that apparently he's on some sort of minutes restriction because they always find a way to hold him under 22 or 25 minutes, and tonight he played just over 20 minutes. So I think that his plantar fasciitis is still an issue and that he can only go for small stretches at a time.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because I didn't realize.
But he was great. You're right.
His versatility on the defensive end. He got 8 rebounds. He got 3 offensive boards. Although Atlanta was certainly conceding offensive boards in that game to prevent any fast breaks. Celtics scored 2 fast break points through 3 quarters. None in the first half.
And it was barely a fast break because there were two or three Hawks back on defense. So if the Celtics had not scored on that possession, or on that one pass by to Terry Rozier out for the layup, like if he had decided to pass it out, it would not have been a fast break anymore.
That's true. So the Celtics, a team that needs to score in transition, got no transition points in that game. I don't know what they didn't think the first quarter had a couple of lag outs. I'm assuming they didn't get very many, but if they did, the game was decided at that point anyway. So I'm just gonna call that no fast break point.
I think they ended up technically with four. I think Brent Berry said something about them making two free throws on after a fast break, and then the two Rozier points there that we just discussed. So overall, let's go with four fast break points in total for the game. Although it may have gotten a little bit better towards the end, I stopped counting after a while because it did get so ugly there. And I mean, Calvin, I mean, we're talking about not being able to score on the fast break, talking about not being able to score in general. And obviously, the built-in excuse here is, where was Avery Bradley, right? Bradley was not on the floor. He didn't play tonight, and he's probably not going to play for a couple weeks with this hamstring injury. And that's what people are going to be saying around Boston for the next 24, 48, 72 hours until Game 3 comes around. Oh, Bradley's not there, so we don't expect this team to do well, and we don't expect them to score. And, I mean, maybe this does show how important Avery Bradley is to the Celtics and how integral he is and how good of a player he has been this year. But I hate to hear that excuse already, and I'm telling you, it's going to happen.
Well, Murray, you're leading me right into my next positive. Three positives. So my next positive, I thought Rozier looked great in that game. I mean, maybe great's an overstatement, but he looked good considering he was a rookie. Playing his first playoff game. Well, maybe he got a couple minutes in game one, I can't remember.
He had a bad technical.
Playing significant minutes. His first playoff game with significant minutes. Looked well. They mentioned his rebounding, of course, which is good, but I thought he looked quick and he moved the ball around. But, again, to turn this into a negative, not to criticize the great Brad Stevens, but let's be honest, Rory. Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart have, through the course of their careers, been susceptible, be it the style of play that they play or some fragility on the part of their bodies, have, always consistently been in and out of the lineup. My question to you, Murray, is it a fair criticism to throw at Brad Stevens and say this team does not have a lot of backup guards with experience? I mean, we'll get to R.J. Hunter in a second. But should these guys, Rozier be playing his most career minutes in a playoff game? Is that an unreasonable criticism of me to say Stevens probably should have prepared this guy a little bit better at this point?
Maybe they should have. It's kind of – it's an interesting point, but I don't know if you can really accept the fact that – or if you're accepting the fact that they have young guards ahead of him still. The argument on the other side of that would obviously be that Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley are still young, Smart especially, so they need even more minutes, and working in a guy like Rozier is even more difficult when you have a player that has been performing well for you like Evan Turner, who takes guard minutes away from the two positions there, point guard and the shooting guard. Evan Turner has been playing well. He's been getting a lot of minutes off the bench. So he's a guy that, as a veteran, has shown that he deserves to play as well, especially within the system. But Terry Rozier is a great athlete, and Brad Stevens is very forthright with that. He says that all the time that Rozier is one of the best athletes on the team. He's a freak rebounder type of thing, and he just needs to sort of get acclimated. And I think he did show that tonight. But he also lost his cool a little bit and threw the ball back at Schroeder when Schroeder tried to slap it out of his hand. So, I mean, you need to keep your head there. The Celtics are trying to make a little bit of a comeback, albeit they were down 16 at the time. And you just give them a technical and they make the free throw. Now it's 17, they have the ball, and the Hawks just kept pushing it towards 20 the whole night because of little things like that. And, I mean, we're going to go down a long list of negatives, so leading with the positives is fine with me. But my counter argument to that is that, I mean, sure, Brad Stevens probably, in hindsight, would have loved to have gotten Terry Rozier some more minutes. But at the same time, these younger guards that he, or these young guards that he has on his team already, have already earned those minutes. And in his mind, apparently, Rozier did not until he was really pressed into it.
Well, I think the Celtics play a lot of three-guard lineups. They play a lot of lineups with Smart, you know, at the small forward. And they play a lot of lineups with Evan Turner at the small forward. So if you look at it from that perspective, do you really feel like they didn't have room for another guard? I mean, if we talk about, I realize Rozier's not a point guard, and this team definitely has a backup point guard problem. Functionally, basically, Evan Turner becomes the backup point guard. But it's a bit of a problem because Evan Turner is not always in facilitator mode. We can get to that in a minute if you want. But I just look at this team's depth right now. And again, yes, if you have Bradley, it's fine because then you know, in your three-guard rotation, one of those guys is off the bench. But I just feel like they should have been better prepared for this situation if one of those guys, be it Bradley or Smart, you know, got hurt in the playoffs, because it's been a consistent thing. Not just, you know, in seasons past, both of those guys have been hurt several times this season. And I think you have to prepare Rozier or whoever you decide to be sort of your backup guard, especially because this team plays a lot of three-guard lineups, in this situation. And Brad Stevens, great coach, but that doesn't mean he's perfect. That's something I would probably criticize him about.
Well, Avery Bradley only missed 6 games in the regular season. So if Brad Stevens is basing anything off of the performance that his player has gotten or given him this year, then you would expect him to be on the floor. And honestly, if you want to criticize anything about Stevens, I'm wondering why Bradley was on the floor for 2 or 3 runs up and down the court after clearly pulling something in his leg. And I don't know, he seemed like he wanted out and they couldn't find a way to stop the clock and get him out of that game until it really cramped up / strained. And it put him out for a couple of weeks. So I'm curious to see if somebody had caught that, or to know if somebody had caught that. I mean, obviously you can't do anything about it now, but if somebody had caught that at the time, maybe Bradley only misses game 2 and he's back for game 3 if he sits out the rest of that game before really doing some damage to his leg. And I don't know, that seems to be the criticism to me as far as not having a Rozier ready. Maybe they forced Bradley to get hurt there a little bit, if you want to say something about that, because I don't know. I noticed it right away, basically, and other people noticed it too, and apparently the coaching staff didn't, or they wanted him to keep playing on it, which to me made things worse.
I think the problem with that is that guys, you know, come up limping a little after a play all the time. And especially in football, maybe you can make the argument that, like, that the coaching staff should, you know, be on it and make sure this guy, this insane linebacker who wants to go back in, you know, in the game, shouldn't do it with his tibia sticking out of his leg. But I think in the NBA, like, the onus is a little bit on the guy to know when to take a timeout and know when to continue play, just because, like, you take a bump or, like, you know, you have a little muscle pull and you limp for a minute and then you're fine. Like, you see that all the time. And you see other times where guys need to call a timeout. And then, you know, you see Al Horford bang his knee, calls a timeout, goes to the sideline for a minute and comes right back in. I think if Avery Bradley continues to play on it, then you just wait to look at it during a timeout. But the fact that he continues
to
support me, it's like they assumed that he was okay. I would not.
Yeah, I don't know. He looked like, he wasn't really running up and down the court. He looked like he was hobbling a little bit and asking to get out, but it was a kind of a quick sequence. So either way, folks, hit us up on Twitter at CLNS Radio. Hit us up on Facebook.com/CLNS fans. And don't forget to download the CLNS Radio free mobile podcast app, because you can get all of the pregame shows that Larry H. Russell, who led our program tonight with a little information of his own, has been doing. You can get those on the app right then and there. So download that. It's free. You can get it on iTunes and on Android devices. Search for CLNS Radio in your app marketplace and you'll find it. It's there. It's good. Do it. I don't know, Calvin, plenty more to talk about here. Go ahead.
You've seen a few Hawks games in your time, right? Maybe you don't watch them on the regular, but I'm sure you've seen a game now and then.
Yeah, the Celtics have definitely had a few matchups against the Atlanta Hawks over the years.
Yeah, in all those matchups, can you ever remember Kyle Korver getting more open threes than he got in the first quarter of that game? How many times? Let me ask you the question. Look, here's one thing. If Al Horford or Millsap sets a huge screen and Kyle Korver gets off a three behind it, you know what? That's the NBA, man. What are you going to do? Somebody got laid out. They couldn't get there in time. He makes a shot. But five of his threes, Roy, five different times, Kyle Korver got off a three. Four of them were because the Celtics were chasing penetration into the lane. Kyle Korver's man leaving him, only to see Kyle Korver get the ball back and then a wide open shot because his man couldn't recover quickly enough. Twice RJ Hunter did it, and Brad Stevens' hilarious stare down of Hunter after that was amazing to me. But I don't understand how this guy, you know, one of the best shooters in the NBA, was wide open so often from the perimeter in that game. How do you just leave him to go chase penetration?
Well, Hunter was one of those problems, and I mean, Stevens called the timeout immediately when Hunter basically left Korver alone. But later in the game, you saw Marcus Smart staying with Korver and allowing the Hawks to get to the basket because of it. There was no help on the other side. So either way, it's tough to play against this Atlanta Hawks team. But I'm with you. In that first quarter, that was part of the problem, is that Kyle Korver was just getting anything he wanted. And it just went really poorly for the Celtics, because the guy was on fire. He was just three after three. I think he hit four or five in that first quarter. So,
but he was on fire because they were wide open threes.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You can't leave a guy like that open. He's such a good shooter.
Yeah.
He's one of the best shooters in the league. You just can't do it. And that's the reason Stevens called that timeout so quickly after getting Hunter in the game when Smart went down with that knee to the hip. So,
I mean, yeah.
It's just the entire Celtics team to start this game, Calvin, just seemed unprepared for the physicality that the Hawks brought to them. The refs were letting them play. The Celtics seemed undersized again, as I said that they probably would be coming into the series. And the Hawks just overpowered them to start this game. They fought back a little bit nicely in the middle of the game. But overall, this was the type of game that I think you have to expect, especially when one of your top scorers is out. And not to mention, we haven't even gotten to Kelly Olynyk, who did not play tonight, one of the Celtics big men. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But either way, they just came out flat again. They need to find a way to start better at home in game 3 and 4, or this is going to be a sweep.
Yeah, you know, Marcus Smart took a hip check early on in that game, and I thought he hadn't recovered defensively. For most of the first half, he looked a little wobbly. He also gave up a wide-open three to Korver. He got destroyed by Teague on a crossover. He just looked a little slow to me on the change of direction. I feel like that hip injury probably had something to do with it. But in the second half, to his credit, he came back again. You know, giving him credit for a guy who's 6'4", guarding a 6'8", Millsap. He did a spectacular job in some limited possessions in the second half as well. But I thought in the first half he was a little disastrous. Now, I guess I don't want to put too much on the Celtics defense, because obviously they held Atlanta to 89 points. Overall, they were fine. It was just a couple of things that were obvious. I mean, if they just held Korver down a little bit on those threes, then maybe this is a different basketball game. But really the problem was on the other end, right? The Celtics offense was essentially a disaster in this game.
Well, yeah.
I was letting you lead with it. I can go with it if you want. But.
No, I'll go with it. That's the obvious thing, and we haven't even really talked about it, because these guys just couldn't make a shot. They just, again, over and over again, were either taking bad shots or forcing shots. I remember one play early on in the game. I think they were probably down 20 at that point, and they had just made a decent play, right? And they made a nice play on defense. They got a stop, and they're running down on the fast break. And Isaiah Thomas gets a pass that's sort of low from Jay Crowder. And instead of holding up and trying to set something else up or get to the basket because he had the defender off balance, he took a three basically had to bend all the way down to the floor and pick up the ball and take a three from there. And it was just very ugly. There were a lot of ugly shots from all of the Celtics in this game. Even Amir Johnson, who was, when you look at the box score, was 6'11". He jacked two ugly threes that you knew were not going in when he took the shot. And granted, they were relatively close to the end of the shot, to the shot clock, but the Celtics offense was just abysmal all around tonight. Too many three-pointers, not enough good three-pointers, and just they couldn't make a shot anywhere. They were 28 of 88 overall, Calvin. That is horrendous.
Right. You know what the problem with their offense is when it comes down to it? It's one, yeah, they didn't get any fast break points. That's a huge problem because they need easy buckets. They didn't get them. They didn't hit any threes. They had 5 out of 28. That's a problem, too, because it's reducing the spacing. You see the Hawks are giving them threes that they're not hitting. But the bigger problem is all they're taking are threes and attempts at the rim. You see you saw Evan Turner come in the second quarter and have a nice little run there of three or four shots. And the difference between Evan Turner and everyone else in the game is not to, you know, talk about inefficiencies or whatever, but Evan Turner is actually taking mid-range shots. He has a shot basically nobody else is taking. Isaiah Thomas is going to the rim or taking a three on every possession. You know what else about Isaiah, Ray? Look, you look at his numbers and you say he had 2 assists. With 4 minutes left in the game, he had 0 assists. 0. You look at what was going on in this game. The Celtics had 5 assists at the half, okay? 5 assists for a half. 3 of those assists were on touch passes. So, you know, the ball got passed to one guy and it just got kicked over to the next guy who made a shot. There were only 2 assists in the first half that were created off dribble penetration. Isaiah Thomas is going to the rim and not passing the ball. Even Evan Turner, who's like the secondary point guard, was mostly creating for himself. This team needs to move the ball more than they're moving it. Everybody's standing around. Nobody's cutting. Nobody's dribble penetrating and then passing. Isaiah Thomas basically became, you know, he created his own shot every time. But you saw Millsap and Horford just waiting for him at the rim. Just waiting for him.
Again, I said it earlier. I don't want to make this excuse, but I know that this is what people are going to start to say. I know that this is what the radio people are going to harp on around here and other podcasters. They didn't have Avery Bradley, so the team needs to adjust, right? Well, guess what? This is the playoffs. You need to adjust in-game or between games. You don't have any time to figure this thing out during the game. And like you said, they were all standing around. They were just starting to play the one-on-one isolation ball. Luckily, Evan Turner got things going a little bit. But it's just not something that we're used to seeing because Avery Bradley is out of the lineup. He's one of the guys that is making those cuts. He's the guy that is sneaking back door for layups every once in a while. He is one of the best defenders in the league and actually was highest on the list of Defensive Player of the Year votes for guards, if you want to consider Kawhi Leonard a small forward, which I do, although I know he plays a lot of shooting guard for them. But regardless, Bradley not being in the lineup is a big part of that, and unfortunately, that's going to be the excuse. And I think it's valid to an extent because, like you said earlier, maybe they should have had Terry Rozier a little bit better. It's rough that Marcus Smart got hurt a little bit. We haven't even touched on the fact that Jay Crowder doesn't look like himself because his ankles are bothering him. I don't think he has any lift. So the list goes on. And again, I hate making excuses, but this is just the way I sort of see it. And with all these things piled up, the Hawks are the better team right now. And it's going to be tough for the Celtics to come home and steal one. But we'll have to wait and see for Game 3 on Friday. We are going to go to the SeatGeek toll-free call lines right now at 347-215-7771 and see what the people have to say, Calvin, because I think we've blabbered on enough about how bad this Celtics team played tonight. Although, if the call lines do die down, I'm sure there's some more that we can come up with and actually a few more things that I do want to touch on. We'll see what the people have to say, though.
I've got more.
Up first, what? What'd you say? Calvin?
I said I've got more.
You've got more, of course. Okay, up first is Alan from Titletown Apparel. And Alan, I know that you've been listening intently and watching these games from start to finish. So how do you feel about our Celtics team here? And, I mean, what are their chances in taking a game at home?
Well, taking a game at home, these are 2 must-wins. I actually pulled on Twitter today to see if today was a must win, and I believe it was 95% of the people said today was a must win. Well, forget that. These next two games are must wins. If they go home and they take one of two at home, which that's ridiculous. You need to take both games and even the series. If they lose one of these games at home, it's good night and pray for the ping pong balls and the draft. But let's start. First things first. Let's go with the defense isn't the problem. It starts with Isaiah on offense. He's been the engine that makes the team run. And when he's just not making shots, the team looks depleted on offense. They look stagnant. Everyone looks around at each other. We have no – our offense, if you really look at it, is not a very skilled offense. Besides Isaiah Thomas, who can create off the bounce, he can make tough shots, and that's his problem. He has to make too many tough shots, too many using English off the glass, floating over seven-footers. And when he's diving into guys trying to draw contact himself and he's not getting those calls, like tonight, life is very difficult for him. And then not to mention he's poor on the defensive end. He can't check Teague. They have to put him on either Steph Lozier or Korver or someone who put the ball on the ground. And Jay Crowder, he's my favorite player on the Celtics, but even him, he doesn't look like the same player after the ankle injury, but he's a
very
one.
You know what, Alan? I was just saying that he looks like he doesn't have any lift right now, and I mean he's kind of out there. He looks like a shell of himself, and he's usually the energy guy, the glue guy for this Celtics team. So that's a little bit discouraging to me.
Right, and he's another guy. He kind of needs to hit that shot to kind of get like his little swagger going, you know. But I mean, he's not a very athletic guy. I mean, he doesn't really go to the rim and like throw it down. He's kind of really he plays below the rim. He likes to hit the set shot three, and then he'll take a straight line dribble drive to the lane if it's there. So I mean, he's another guy who really can't create. I mean, really all you have is Isaiah and Turner. I mean, Turner, I guess, was the only really somewhat bright spot to this offense. And if I'm Brad Stevens, I know as bad as this sounds, they got to switch up this lineup, and I think you got to start Turner. You can't get down in a hole. I think we have to maybe have Turner run the point and put Isaiah at the two to start this game. We need offense. We can't get in a hole. Even if we go down a couple points early, it's demoralizing. I think you have to come out strong and get the Boston Garden faithful, like, happy and excited, and hopefully they can feed off that. And then with that, I think the defense, the deflections, the fast breaks. How many fast break points do we have? Do we have any easy baskets tonight? It looked like everything was
quarters.
Everything.
Yeah, we were speculating that it was like four total. I haven't seen the exact number, but I think it's four total.
Right, like
Calvin, what do you think about the suggestion to shake up the starting lineup there?
Yeah, it's funny because I had thoughts on that I was holding off for a few minutes, but I'm curious to see if Alan is aligned with my thinking. Who are you saying that you would move Smart to the bench to bring Turner in?
I would move Smart to the bench, even though yes, we take our best off the bench scorer and we put him in the starting lineup and we lose that scorer off the bench. But we're desperate right now. Desperate times call for desperate measures. We need scoring. Smart right now, his head is elsewhere. He just tries to draw all the contact when he goes to the hoop. He fumbles the ball. And not to mention, Teague put him on skates tonight. So if he's not going to even lock down, then he has no purpose then on the court. So I say go with Turner in the starting lineup.
Here's where I'm at. I like your idea to put Turner in the starting lineup. They need more ball handling, although I think you're letting Isaiah off a little bit easy in this situation. I think Isaiah has to be more of a distributor than he's been in the first two games. He's the guy who can dribble drive. He has to find other guys. But that being said, I do like the idea of moving Turner in the starting lineup. But the guy I think they need to bench is Jared Sellinger. And the reason why is with the lineup they're playing against the Hawks, name the guy on the Hawks that Jared Sellinger can guard. He played 14 minutes tonight. Okay, he played 19 minutes in game one. Yeah, name the starter that he can guard. He can't guard anyone.
He can't. Honestly, he couldn't guard. Sellinger couldn't guard me. He couldn't. He couldn't guard my stepfather.
That's
but the thing about Sellinger is he's our best skilled big man, and when he's not making shots, he blows. He doesn't rebound. He doesn't bring hustle.
That's the big problem there,
to
Alan.
The team either.
Yep.
But,
right. That's the big problem. And we appreciate the call there. We're going to move on because we've got some other callers here. But as far as Sullinger is concerned, Calvin, that is interesting because I heard some people talking about this, and I agree with it before the game, that if he were to try and use his body and get into the post a little bit and work Al Horford or Paul Millsap on the offensive end, then he might, by the end of the game, make things easier for him or any other Celtics big men on the defensive end if those guys are a little bit worn down. He didn't do any of that tonight. And he basically has been the aloof Jared Sullinger, just seemingly waltzing through the game. And I don't know, the intensity that we've seen from him at times in the past has certainly not been there in the first couple of games. And, I mean, the Celtics need him to step up pretty quickly, I think. They're going to have a chance. Go ahead.
At the rim, Paul Millsap is a destroyer. He will eat Jared Sullinger's lunch over and over again, and we've seen it. Every time Sullinger tries to go at Millsap at the rim, even Amir Johnson, who has a height advantage, like Millsap got to him. The problem is the matchup. He's not – look, usually bigger guys he can go around. Millsap is essentially the exact same size as Sullinger, only significantly faster. So I think the way for Sullinger to be able to get over on Millsap is pull him out and hit jumpers. But the problem is he's also not hitting any threes, and I don't know if Celtics fans would be happy if Jared Sullinger was taking, you know, five or six threes. So
no, definitely not.
The way – yeah. The problem is Millsap and Horford are waiting under the basket because the only thing the Celtics are doing are threes and direct shots at the rim.
Right. So this is what I'm saying about Sullinger, that if he's going to be in there, even those mid-range jumpers from him are no good because he's backpedaling every time. He doesn't go for the rebounds. And it's just it seems like he shouldn't even be out there. So I'm with you.
Like
get him out of the starting lineup.
Yeah. Three. I watched that game, and three guys who I thought shouldn't play another minute in the series were Jared Sullinger. Obviously, RJ Hunter, right, at this point. I mean,
sure.
He does not seem to know what he's doing out there. And, you know, I hate to say this because I like the guy, but I don't think Tyler Zeller can defend either one of those dudes either. I think
no.
the only shot the Celtics have, in my opinion, is, I mean, you hope Jay Crowder's knee holds up, but you have to move Crowder to the four. You have to hope, you know, Smart can play the three defensively. Evan Turner's, you know, guarding a big two. And then you try to go from there. I think they did a good job defensively. I think you do that. You try to create more ball handling on the floor. But I'm just not sure how many minutes Sullinger can get in the series while the starters are on the floor. You want to move Sullinger in and he, you know, have him play Mike Scott and Muscala and those kind of guys. Like Jared Sullinger, you know, will rebound underneath on those dudes all day. But I feel like when the Horford Millsap combo is on the floor, I have no confidence in Jared Sullinger's ability to play against those guys specifically.
Yeah, and it's tough when we say that these three guys that played a combined 45 minutes need to be taken out of the rotation and not play at all, because who else is going to play, right? They have to play. There's no other choice. You're not going to put Jordan Mickey out there and James Young out there, even though BU alum John Holland did get his first NBA minutes in the playoffs, I don't think he played in the regular season, so I think this is his first NBA minutes ever, and it comes in a playoff game. He did get a three-pointer off that he missed, but Boston University right there, Calvin, playing for the Celtics. How about that story? That's not something we need to really dwell on at this point, though. Go ahead.
What's the ETA on Olynyk? Is he back for game
three?
So
that's a big question. That's a big question. I'm hoping that Olynyk will be back because he's a big factor. And if you're going to sit any of those guys down, he's obviously going to need to play. But I haven't heard anything. I just think he's a day-to-day situation. Hopefully with a couple days off here till Friday, he can get some work on that shoulder and be ready to go for game three. All right, Calvin. Up next on our toll-free SeatGeek call lines at 347-215-7771 is one of our wonderful Facebook followers checking in from the Bleed Green group on Facebook. It is Miley. Miley, how are you feeling after this game tonight and the Celtics coming home on Friday? What do you think their chances are in this series?
Well, after today's game, I was, like, very frustrated, but I think once they play at home Friday, they'll get those two wins in a row at home and even up the series at 2-2.
I really hope they do that, but I have a hard time feeling that they will be able to the way they've been playing on offense. What do you think the problem is with this team right now?
Right now, just shooting too many threes, and their shooting percentage just isn't that great. And rebounding.
So just about everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, let's hope that the Celtics can figure that out and get those two wins that you think they will on Friday and Sunday in games 3 and 4. Thanks for the call, Miley, and thanks for checking us out on Facebook at facebook.com/CLNSfans. Calvin, I got to remind everybody, of course, that the SeatGeek toll-free call lines are brought to us by SeatGeek. And if you use the promo code CelticsBeat at SeatGeek.com, you're going to get $20 off your first order. So that's exciting. Go to SeatGeek.com today and use that CelticsBeat promo code because not only does CelticsBeat do a great job with their Celtics coverage here on CLNS Radio, the leading online provider of audio video coverage of the Boston Celtics, but they've set up this wonderful promo code for you as well. So go to SeatGeek.com or download the app today. It's a free app for iTunes and Android devices, and use that promo code in the settings tab, CelticsBeat, all one word, and you get $20 off your first ticket purchase. Get that app today and use that promo code, CelticsBeat. Good stuff. All right. Should we keep rolling on these call lines?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. I just noticed that Nick Gelso so kindly labeled them for me, and I screwed up the order, but that's all right. We're just going to keep rolling with it because that's what I do. We're going now to Gene in New Jersey. Gene, how are you feeling tonight after this terrible loss? Celtics go down 0-2 to the Atlanta Hawks in round one of the NBA playoffs.
The thing that really worries me about what's going on is the intensity. All year long, we haven't been an eye-popping offensive team. Our calling has been, you know, being intent on the defensive end, taking the gas out of teams. We're giving the Atlantic Hawks too much confidence in the first quarter. And another thing with Isaiah Thomas, I think you guys remember when he was saying the whole, you know, great players are made in the playoffs, you know, great players, I want to establish myself as a great player. I feel like he may be focusing too much on that, and that's kind of taken away from him playing team basketball, Celtics basketball, getting baskets off of assists. We just seem really, really stagnant in our offensive schemes.
Yeah, Calvin, so, that's something you were touching on earlier. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm curious. How much of that would you put on Isaiah directly? I was talking to an earlier caller. He didn't have any assists until 4 minutes left in the basketball game. I saw it every time, in my opinion, he's either taking a three or he's trying to take it to the rim where Millsap and Horford are just waiting for him. I feel like he's got to sort of find a third gear there, right, where he either cuts and finds a dish man. But my question to you is, how much of that do you put on Isaiah for, you know, quote, being selfish, and how much would you put on the offense, guys not moving? You know, I want to be a little bit more critical of Stevens here because I feel like you see times, for example, when he gets Amir Johnson in the pick and roll. You see the pick and roll with Amir and Isaiah Thomas work spectacularly. Where was that this game? Where were plays for Isaiah to run? I know a lot of that is Avery Bradley moving off ball, but why don't we have, you know, Marcus Smart moving off the ball? Why does Marcus Smart only take a shot, you know, when he's got the ball in his hand and he either shoots a three or drives to the rim himself? Why is Smart not trying to cut? Or, like, where's the offense? Where's guys working around Isaiah Thomas to try to free themselves up for a shot? Part of it's on him and part of it's on them.
Yeah,
what do you think, Gene?
I think the thing is, like, those guys, they haven't had to really step up into that kind of a role this year. So kind of looking for all these guys to step up, you know, in a big playoff game. A lot of these guys don't have a whole lot of, like, playoff experience. So we're looking for these guys like Marcus Smart to step in, you know, the shoes of Avery Bradley, who's the longest tenured Celtic on the team, you know. It's just kind of big shoes to step in. So a lot of those guys, I feel like they're looking at Isaiah. And when they get down, in the, you know, early in the first, like how they did tonight, they're looking at Isaiah to kind of bail them out. So everybody's kind of caught standing around. If you notice, when they run the offensive sets, when people get stopped up, what do? They pass the ball right back to Isaiah. You know, there's no fluidity in the offense.
Yeah, and you know what, Gene? I think part of that is the fact that Isaiah is hanging out towards the half-court line or top of the key waiting for that ball instead of making movements and cutting himself. Maybe Isaiah should be the one that's filling in for Avery Bradley on these backdoor cuts, regardless of whether he can make the layup or not. Maybe they should make him the guy that's running more off-ball stuff. We've seen it in the past, but not a whole lot. Maybe that needs to be the tweak that they do.
I agree.
I guess so much of the Celtics' effective offense seems to be stuff, things that they do in transition. And since they got exactly no transition opportunities tonight, you saw what that did to their offense. I mean, when they're maybe they just need to gamble more. I mean, it might sound ridiculous, but maybe they need to go for steals, because if they don't, they're going to give up points anyway to a certain extent, but they're also not going to be able to score on the other end. Maybe they need to try to create more chaos in this series, is what I'm getting at.
That game seemed
entirely too half-court, entirely too controlled. I think they're going to have a hard time winning that game because their offense is just not sophisticated enough.
Yeah, something needs to change around here.
Yeah, they can't shoot, and most of them can't really dribble drive. So I think the way they usually win is by creating those turnovers, by creating man opportunities, but they just were not there at all.
All right, Gene, we appreciate the call, and thanks for listening, sir. You brought up some great points. The offense is definitely an issue here for the Celtics team in this series against the Atlanta Hawks as they go down 0-2, and they have quite the uphill battle going forward in this series. Luckily, we're coming back home here. The fans will be there. The fans will be ready to go. Friday night, 8 p.m., the Hawks are coming into town. You got to check out the TD Garden, and you know what that means, Calvin. That means the Garden Report is back, and Jared Weiss is going to be calling into the post-game show, and he's going to have a lot of great information. So before that game happens, go check out some of the older stuff that he's done, some of the other home games where he's had the Garden Report. YouTube.com/CLNSRadio is where you find all that stuff, and don't forget, CLNS Radio is definitely the leading online provider for all of your audio and video coverage of the Boston Celtics. And the leader of our coverage is Jared Weiss. So if you like the other stuff that we've put together, you have to check out the Garden Report because it's excellent. YouTube.com/CLNSRadio. Some great interviews that he then brings to the post-game shows with his call on the Grandstand Celtics Locker Room Report after every home game. So don't forget. Check that out on Friday. All right, Calvin. Our next caller is a good friend of ours to the show of Careless Whispers as well. And we haven't heard from him in quite some time, so I'm excited to hear what his thoughts are on this series. The one and only Sam in San Diego. What's up, man? And I hope you're not too down after this loss tonight.
No, I mean, you got a chance to really digest the loss by having the loss take place over the whole game. We were never in the game. We never mounted any kind of a comeback. It was pretty embarrassing to have the whole nation watch and have Barkley commentate on our team. But
Barkley.
I wanted to say that the Atlanta coaching, I think, has a lot to do with this. It seems like we're playing right into their hands. Like Calvin was saying, Isaiah's either shooting or three, or he's being blocked at the rim. Normally through their season, we see Isaiah blow by the defender and finish at the rim, but they're right at the rim, and he can't finish, so the shot gets blocked. So I think it's throwing his game off completely. Marcus Smart, he seems to be worried more about the contact than actually scoring, and he really needs to have his focus on the shot, since that seems to be such a big problem for him. But instead, it seems like at every point, whether it's at the rim or from the outside, he's looking to get fouled. Even, you know, the thing about him is I noticed that even when he gets into the lane, it seems like he doesn't know how to time his steps because he's not accelerating towards the rim. Even when he's able to make nice passes in the lane, it looks like if that pass isn't made, he has nowhere to go. So I think that's something that I'm concerned about with him. Amir Johnson, Evan Turner, I saw them take back-to-back threes, which I don't understand that. Solinger, man, Solinger's a mess. And he's showing, like, what a lack of athleticism that we have up front.
Yeah, I don't know if his head's not in it or what, Sam, but something – I mean, Solinger definitely is somebody that we criticized earlier in this show for not using his body to his full potential and not really putting up a fight against Al Horford or Paul Millsap. Calvin went as far to say that he just flat out can't guard either one of those guys.
You know what? I'm sorry to switch back to your earlier point about Smart. But you know what I've noticed about his drives, and you guys can tell me if you disagree, but I feel like when he slips into that second gear when he's trying to accelerate past, he seems to, like, take that second gear, like, a half second too late to where, like, the defender's already kind of in front of him, and then he, like, tries to go around him, but it's already too late because he doesn't have the space to go around him at that point, and then he sort of gets trapped by him. I feel like if he just, like, switched into that, you know, now I'm going to go faster mode a second earlier, he could get past his guy, but instead he seems to get smothered by the bodies of guys he's going up against when he goes inside.
He's a free agent, right? So I think he's losing money as we speak. He's not the kind of big man that you really need moving forward in this NBA.
Calvin was talking about Smart's drives, but my criticism Jared Solinger.
Crowder, you know, Crowder doesn't have a first step right now, and even when he has a first step, he can't finish at the rim at all, you know, aside from the fact that he can't shoot, so he's not really helping us at all. And, you know, last thing is just the energy level. It doesn't even seem like a regular home game. I mean, we don't seem to have anything going out there. I mean, the only thing I could see that was of any fun tonight was just seeing Rozier play big minutes, you know, and score, you know, and because you could see he's a player. But other than that, I mean, there's almost nothing about this whole season that's been shown in these playoffs so far for the nation to see. We look like we're a complete mess, and I don't see how anybody watching would see that we have the kind of talent that made us a three seed for most of the season.
Yeah, it's very strange to see this Celtics team out there right now, and I mean, I hate to keep going back to the Avery Bradley thing, but with he and Olynyk both out, it's been a tough transition for this team, and they haven't been able to figure it out. And we've touched on it all night. The backups, the depth of this team is not as good as maybe people thought it was going into the playoffs, because they did end with such a good record compared to where a lot of people thought they were going to be and compared to where they were last year. But I guess the argument would be is if they had Isaiah Thomas all last year, maybe they would have been a 48-win team and still had this undersized problem going into a playoff series against a team that has been there before time and time again. Sam, we love hearing from you, man. And next time Careless Whispers is on, we'll be sure to have a little longer show so you can hit us up on that end too.
Yeah, good hearing
from you. I'll definitely be there. Yeah, you too. I'll definitely be there, guys. Go Celtics.
All right, there goes Sam in San Diego, one of my favorite callers to the network for sure. And coming up next on the SeatGeek toll-free call lines at 347-215-7771 is one of our greatest new additions to the CLNS Radio post-game show, and that is the one and only Josue Pavone from WEEI here in Boston. Josue, you're going to be hosting one of our post-game shows a little later in the series if it goes far enough. How do you feel about this team tonight? I mean, maybe this will be your only chance to get on CLNS post game show for this series.
I mean, it might be. That's what's going through my mind during this game. I said, are we going to see the Celtics in the game five? I mean, I don't know the way they're looking tonight. Boy, that was ugly tonight, wasn't it? Though, I mean, you look at the way the Atlanta Hawks came out with the intensity on defense. Kyle Korver showed his side of, you know, why he's Kyle Korver, and, you know, the one thing that everybody was afraid of, he was able to do tonight. And then he added 7 rebounds by the end of the game, which is one thing I didn't think he had in him, you know. Look, the main points I wanted to bring up in this and you know, the reason why I'm calling is the way the Celtics offense, the way the plays are being executed, and the way shots are not falling down for the Celtics. I think that is the biggest concern for this team. I think that Brad Stevens is giving these guys the green light. They're getting the shots that they normally knock down, but they're just not going through the hoop. Jay Crowder, 1-for-9. Isaiah Thomas, 4-for-15. He was able to luckily hit 16 points because he was getting himself to the free throw line, which is one thing that you can always rely on. But you need to hit shots on the floor. You have to hit shots on the floor. Jared Sullinger, have you guys seen him in the series? Because he's nowhere to be found. He's not doing anything to the Celtics right now. You guys touched on that earlier, and I'm not saying, oh, come on, Sully, give us 15, give us 17, give us 20 points. I just want to see a double-double. I mean, and that's something that he should be capable of at this point in his career. Is that not fair to ask for?
I mean, you know what? Not even that. Just how about 10 and 6 or 10 and 7? He's not even doing anything close to that. It's been pretty abysmal for this guy. And sure, you can argue that the coach has taken him out and he's not getting as many minutes in this series, but I don't think he's earned it either. He's not showing when he's on the floor that he deserves to be out there with any of these guys. So I'd rather have him give a few more minutes to Amir Johnson. And you know what? Even Jonas Jerebko seems like he has a little bit more energy and confidence than Sullinger out there. Of course, he's not going to be able to defend Horford or Millsap either. But I'd rather see him out there right now, Calvin, than Sullinger.
Well, I agree with that. I think the difference between Jerebko and Sullinger, yeah, Jerebko might not be able to guard Millsap, but you know what he can do? He can hit a three, which, you know, Sullinger's not necessarily going to be able to do as effectively. And more importantly, like, you have to go guard him out there. You can dribble drive and kick it out to Jerebko at the three. I think he helps your spacing more right now than Sullinger does, who's trying to play more inside, where he's just not being as effective. I think as a counterpoint to what Millsap and Horford are doing, Jerebko becomes more interesting. You have to do something to pull those guys away from the rim. And
so
putting Sullinger in the game is not doing
it. Josue, question to you is, who do you replace Sullinger with? Or if you bring him in off the bench, is he still getting that 10 to 15-minute range? And maybe he's playing against the Hawks bench, and it's a little bit better for him, a little easier for him to get his way. Or are you just suggesting that they take him out of the lineup entirely and throw somebody else in there?
You're stuck with him. Unfortunately, you have to stay with him because on paper, let's be honest, I mean, regardless of how badly he's playing, he's your best rebounder. He's your best rebounder. So you have to hope that everything clicks for him on Friday in the paint, just grab some rebounds. I mean, I got to be honest with you guys. I don't see him scoring in the paint against these guys. I think Al Horford and Paul Millsap, I think they eat him up every single game, whether it's in Atlanta or in Boston. However, I do think Sullinger can knock down those shots, not from, I don't want to call it outside, but you know what I'm talking about that free throw line, which we've seen him knock down time and time again throughout the season. I think those are the kind of shots he's going to be able to get because I don't think Millsap and Horford are, I don't think they consider him a threat from out there, but we've seen him knock down those shots.
He's got to knock
that
down. I've praised him for knocking that down and for improving his game and giving up the three-pointer to take that step in and knock those shots down. But he doesn't have his footing or something in these first couple of games. He is running down the court too quickly after he takes those shots, and they're just not falling. Everything's short.
If someone can knock down the...
Can I step in with a counter about the rebounding? I don't think it's as big of an issue as another caller alluded to it as well, as people are letting on. The Celtics had 10 offensive rebounds in this game. They had 15 offensive rebounds in game one. Yes, they got out-rebounded in this game, but they also missed 60 shots. If you look at rebound percentage, the Hawks only had, three offensive rebounds in this game. So if you look at rebound percentage and rebounds they should get, the Celtics are actually a pretty good rebounding team this year, even without Sullinger on the floor. And in this particular case, I don't think it matters because the Hawks are clearly trying to prevent the fast break at all costs in giving up rebounds regardless. I don't think you need Sullinger out there for his rebounding because the Celtics are doing fine in regards to that. They got 25 second chance opportunities in two games, and one of them was from Sullinger tonight? I'd have to go back to game one and see, but I don't think it was that many.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it's not like they're getting, they're not getting dominated in the paint in terms of rebounding, but I just feel like for a guy of Sullinger's stature, a guy who has, more than a few years under his belt, I just want to see more energy from the guy. I want to see more of a sense of urgency. I just don't see it. I see him being pushed around and bullied down there. And if he's, you know, to get back to my point about him making shots, I think if you knock down a couple of those shots, you're going to pull out, you're going to have Al Horford and Millsap, they're going to have to guard him. And that's what you want. You want to get those, you want to get the paint open for guys like Isaiah Thomas, for guys like Marcus Smart. Yes, Marcus Smart was able to go to the paint tonight, but how many layups could he convert? I mean, he couldn't. They had the lane completely clogged at this point. I mean, the Celtics are the Hawks are challenging the Celtics to knock down shots, and they can't do it. But here's the silver lining from tonight. I don't think Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, you know, I don't think these guys are going to continue to shoot this poorly. I just don't see that happening in the series. So that's one thing that you have to look forward to in Game 3. However, you cannot let Korver do what he did tonight. He just can't. I mean, you can't give up five threes from one guy.
Somebody's got to chase him.
I mean, you look at, man, it was a sad sight seeing R.J. Hunter chase down Korver tonight. And I'm not, you know, I understand that's a tough cover for R.J. Hunter. That's a tough cover for a rookie who wasn't necessarily in the rotation this season. But you cannot let that happen. I know Avery Bradley's not in there, so you're kind of stuck with, you know, giving Hunter some minutes to guard Korver. But I don't hate putting, you know, switching him off with Jarepko. I think that was something that Stevens was forced to do. And at this point, he has to come up with these ideas, because whether it's Jarepko, whether it's Turner, you can't let Korver do that. And that's something I think completely got the Celtics, you know, just bombarded in that first quarter when Korver was able to go off and do what he did.
Got him off to that horrible start, and it was a big energy problem. Go ahead, Calvin.
Yeah, and let's not put all the blame on Hunter, because he wasn't the only one who left Korver with a wide-open shot. Marcus Smart left him, and Jay Crowder left him one time. So, yeah, Hunter did it twice, you're right. Jarepko did it another time, and then those two guys did as well. So, yeah, to me, that's unforgivable. I was talking about it earlier. It's not even the fact that he made five threes. It's that all five of those threes were open. All four of them were, Kyle Korver's man chasing dribble penetration to leave him wide open, which to me is basically an unforgivable tactical mistake, especially when you have a guy like Amir Johnson, you know, playing the rim. And so I think that can be fixed. That's the good news about that, is that's the kind of strategic mistake you saw in the second half. They went to Korver. Maybe you can argue they did it, you know, a little too aggressively, where he got double teamed off the ball, leaving Mike Scott wide open underneath the rim. You don't want to take it that far, but all you need to do is keep a man on Kyle Korver at all times. It's one thing if he gets involved in a screen play and he hits a tough shot with a hand kind of close to his face. These were wide open shots that he was hitting, and you can't. That's just an inexcusable tactical situation.
All right, Josue, we appreciate the call as always, and here's to hoping that you're hosting a post-game show for Game 5 on Tuesday, and the Celtics get at least that one win to push it to Game 5 so we can hear you again here on CLNS Radio. Good hearing from you now, though.
All right, fellas. I appreciate it, guys. You guys have a good night.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. There you go. You too. There he goes from WEEI here. He's a frequent guest on the Garden Report with Jared Weiss, so we really love him around here on CLNS Radio. And hopefully, like I said, you'll hear him on Tuesday night hosting our post-game show. Speaking of hosting post-game shows, the man that all of the callers have spoken to tonight, besides Calvin and myself, was the host of Game 1's post-game show with Justin Poulin, and it was the model post-game show for CLNS Radio. We haven't really had a model around here in a long time, and I'm happy to say that these two guys are the model, and it's a good thing that he knows how to do it, because he runs the pretty tight ship around here. Nick Gelso, I mentioned him earlier. What's up, buddy? How you doing tonight? You hanging in there with all these callers coming on?
Whoa, man. You're giving me major props. I got to tell you, all the commentary in the Bleed Green group and, you know, text messaging and stuff was, we brought on a lot of new voices, I guess, recently, and added to the team, but everybody's thrilled to have you two back as a team on tonight. So that's awesome.
Oh, that's so
I'm
sweet.
Glad to hear that. I know I had to give
Calvin.
It to you, but
yeah, I'll go over there and see if anyone's saying anything nice about me.
You know, I have to say, you know, Calvin, the great experiment, bringing you on the Lakers fan in 2009 or 10 or whenever it was, man, it worked because they all hated you. They loved to hate you, but now they love you. Like, they want you on the postgame shows. So it's good stuff, man. I'm glad. It's unbelievable. Like, why even talk about this game? Let's just talk about the last, what, 5, 6 years, 7 years? We've all been hosting shows together.
Oh, boy. We could do that forever, Nick. Let's not go that far. That could get a little dangerous.
No,
maybe I shouldn't have brought you
up. I know.
No, the reason people like Calvin is because he knows basketball, unlike most Laker fans that I ran into in L.A. in Staples Center. The guy actually knows what he's talking about.
And you got to give credit to a guy who, you know, is a diehard fan of our arch rival and can literally put in all this time covering the enemy team, the Celtics, for all these years. I mean, it's just, it's like remarkable to me. I think Celtics fans have gained this great respect for him. You know, not just the knowledge of basketball, but also the devotion to our team.
All right, this is not the praise Calvin hour, but we'll, I like to let him get a word in
there.
Go ahead, Calvin.
Yeah, you're making me feel like a huge loser for spending all this time on the Celtics.
All right, Nick. Forget about Calvin,
brilliant.
Nick. What changes do the Celtics need to make? Can they make any changes that will give them a chance to win a game here at home?
I was listening to you guys in between screening calls. We missed Nick Sesento tonight, but I was happy to fill in. Listening to you guys, you know, I think Calvin, you've been kind of tough on Isaiah, and everybody seems to be a bit tough on him, but I look at tonight's game and I think the Celtics got clobbered, but they shouldn't. They just couldn't put the scoring runs together to really make it a competitive game, get it under 10 points. But at the same time, throughout most of the second quarter and second half, they were down, 12, 14 points, and really had, I'd say, one of the worst basketball games of the season. I think there's a lot of changes that need to be made. I like the thought of getting Sully out of the starting lineup. I've had enough of Jared Sollinger. I'm ready to let him go. And I think really Isaiah tried, you know, not to pick on him, but I think he kind of tried to force it tonight. But what do you expect of a guy who, you know, everybody in the media, we're all saying it, fans are saying it, you know, Isaiah needs to step up and we need a leader of this team. Well, you know, tonight he might have just tried a bit too hard. And I liked Jerebko in the lineup, to be honest with you. I mean, it's sad to say, but I liked him in the lineup too. So, you know, I mean, right now it seems like, Rory, I mean, how many times we're in a postseason and even back to the Pearson and Allen and Garnett days, you're talking about an injury that's going to really halt what could be a nice postseason. I'm not saying this team was going to get to the Eastern Conference Finals and certainly not the NBA Finals, but I think they could have really put on a good showing going into the offseason. I don't know if I answered your question at all. I kind of did politics and danced around it. I'm going to throw a question back at you guys. What does this, I guess, MIA not showing up in games 1 and 2. I mean, I guess it's dependent on the rest of the series, but let's say the series only goes 5 games. What does it do for the Celtics postseason? I mean, that's really where my concern is. As far as I'm concerned, you know, a 48-win season is a win. It's a success. And this rebuild has really supremely been a success. But it all comes down to the off season this year. And what does this series, you know, possibly being a disaster and considering the injuries as well, potentially being, you know, a 4 or 5 game dismissal, what does that do for the Celtics offseason?
Well,
that's
I'll start this one because my answer is real easy, and it's something that I've said before and I'll stick to it. And it's that I think if any top level star has targeted Boston or put Boston on their list of places that they would want to play, they did it prior to this postseason, and this postseason is not going to change their mind either way, regardless of how the Celtics fare. I think that in three years, he's done enough to improve the organization and the play of the team and show that he can get guys to overachieve.
Yeah.
That if somebody is going to come here, they've already made that decision, and going out in a sweep
because one of their better players gets hurt in the first round, as long as they still put up a fight, I think people have already decided, Nick, to be honest with you. But I don't know what Calvin thinks about it.
I love that answer. I've listened, you know, obviously I screen all the shows on the network, especially the ones that I have direct contact with that I do a lot of editing for. So I listen to Jared and Sam on the WEEI podcast that we power. I mean, Celtics beat with Forsberg this week, right? Justin and John, even Raining Jays, which has nothing to do with our network, but with the great Jay King and that show. I mean, everybody seems to be debating the question I just asked. And the reason I really like your answer is because you keep it really simple, man. You just say, look, the decisions aren't made, but I guess the impressions of the team have already been made. So, you know,
absolutely.
The injury, you know, and looking at the season, you know, I mean, I think guys like, you know, I'm not going to mention names, but I think free agents have already kind of made that decision. I like your answer. It's simple.
They've already figured it out in my mind. And I don't know, I'm not going to name names either because we can't get in these guys' heads. But I just think that the progression that Stevens has made over the three years, regular season, playoffs or not, I feel like guys would have already decided, and this playoff run doesn't make any difference in their minds. At least that's what it would be like,
you know,
for me. But
yeah,
Calvin,
what
do you think about that? Calvin, get in here.
Yeah, Calvin in. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to halfway disagree with you. I think that,
always,
you know, there's various different types of free agents. The guys who, the Kevin Durants of the world, I will name names, I don't care. I'll name all the names.
Right.
I want to name. The Kevin Durants of the world, like, maybe he knows where he's going, maybe he's not, but certainly he knows, you know, what three teams that he's willing to go to, or what four teams he's willing to go
right
to. And Rui's right in the sense that either Boston's on that list or it's not. I don't think that, here's the thing, I don't think that, like, someone's dying to come play with Isaiah Thomas. So what is it that's like, or you know, no offense to any of the Celtics, but I don't think any of the Celtics players are like, individual players that some attractive free agent is dying to specifically play with. Do I think like someone just has to play with Jared Sullinger? No, I don't think that. What I think is if a free agent wants to come to Boston, it's all going to pay. And I do think guys haven't made up their minds because they don't know what the contracts are yet. They don't know if Boston's going to pay them more than other teams.
Sure,
they don't know,
of course,
you know, they don't know who's
not. I'm just saying
that
either on their list or it's not at this point.
But my
right
point is, it's only your Kevin Durants of the world and, you know, your elite free agents have the luxury of having a list of five teams that they're willing to go to. Everyone else is going where they get the most money. And I think that's
But
what
that's what the Celtics are targeting. I think at this point, that's what the Celtics are targeting, though. They're targeting a top five, and I think they have the goods to do it. I mean, between the picks and the pieces they put together on this team. And I'm going to kind of agree and disagree with you at the same time, kind of give it back to you a little bit here. I think you're right in the sense of, you know, Kevin Durant, and we're using him as the big example. Kevin Durant is not saying, I want to go to Boston because I want to play with Jared Sullinger, or I want to play with Kelly Olynyk. But I think that a player like Durant, taking everything else out of the equation, the culture, the city, everything else, and just saying the players. I think a guy like Durant could admire the style of basketball they play, and I could certainly think that the coach on the Celtics is the biggest asset they have. And I think there are players out there who would want to play with Isaiah Thomas. I'm not saying that it's going to be the end all be all, but I think having a guy like Isaiah who will be a tremendous third option. I mean, think about that. If the Celtics could add one or two big free agents or trades or whatever, Isaiah could bump down to the third option and be so much more effective not having to carry all that weight. And I think that's attractive to free agents too.
I think you're misunderstanding my position a little bit. I'm not saying that players are going, ugh, Isaiah Thomas. What I meant is, you know, most of the time or a lot of the time, you'll see, you know, LeBron James, for example, say a quote in the media like he wants to play with Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony. I don't think that LeBron James is saying I want to play with Isaiah Thomas. I'm not saying he doesn't have a problem playing with Isaiah Thomas. I'm not saying if Boston, you know, ended up being appealing to him that he would be against playing with Isaiah or that guys have a problem playing with Isaiah. My only point is that that playing with any of these players specifically is probably not going to be a draw for anybody unless it happens to be like Isaiah Thomas's college teammates or some sort of extenuating circumstance like that.
I think you're probably right there, Calvin, but my point is that it's not the players that they would be attracted to. It is the system, and your argument is probably going to be, well, why do the top players in the league need a system? LeBron James is basically running his own system in Cleveland, and he's likely going to get to the NBA Finals. That's I guess, the other side of this, right? But my point is that guys like Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, name the top 10 players. We may differ once we get down to 10, but these and obviously not all of them are available. But just that type of player, the idea is that they will fit into a system that the coach can build around them and make it even more efficient for the team to be a good team and win games going forward. And I think if LeBron James had a capable coach around him, or one that he at least respected, which maybe he has now in Tyronn Lue, I guess we haven't figured that out yet, that they would have a better team and they would really be unstoppable. Because to me, he's always clashing with his coaching staff, and that's part of the reason that Cleveland does find these bumps in the road and have had a little bit of trouble.
Yet LeBron has been probably one of Brad Stevens' best marketing pieces ever. When what he said, he went on an advertising campaign for him during the playoffs last year. It was almost bizarre.
My argument is not that LeBron wouldn't be better, or whoever wouldn't be better playing with Brad Stevens. My argument is that free agents don't sign places to play with coaches, especially coaches that don't already have championships. Maybe you can make an argument for Greg Popovich, but outside of that, maybe you can make an argument for a guy like a Phil Jackson. But outside of that, show me all the examples of guys who signed with teams specifically to play for a coach.
Not
because they like the play. Yeah, you can't, because it doesn't make
sense. So I'm hoping Brad Stevens breaks the mold. There is no list right now. There's a first time for everything, and that's what I'm hoping, is that maybe not this year, maybe not even next year, but by the time his contract comes up for extension after the sixth year of his contract, I'm hoping that there will be a superstar type of player to go along with a renewal of Brad Stevens' contract that would say, yeah, I'll come here and play for you for 5 years, Coach Stevens, and maybe put the Celtics really on the map at that point. I'm not even talking about the immediate future here.
Right.
I think so.
Go ahead, Calvin.
Yeah, I think the way the Celtics get their superstar, should they get one, obviously if this draft pick works out as a superstar, and then somebody else who's a superstar wants to play with him, then that's one way they could bring in a guy. Another way they can bring in a guy, disgruntled guy who's under contract, not a free agent. The Celtics assets are obviously in place to trade for a guy.
Right.
And way number three is maybe the Celtics, overpay for a guy who's or give a max contract to a guy who's like arguably not necessarily a max contract guy. Let's say they pay Bradley. I'm just looking at the free agency list. Let's say they pay Bradley Beal the max, although I think he'll get the max from Washington anyway. But Washington doesn't respond, and then all of a sudden Bradley Beal becomes healthy and turns into a superstar. That's the other way they're getting a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that a guy who's already an established superstar right now in the NBA will necessarily want to come play with this particular roster in Boston.
All right, Jill, so we appreciate the call, buddy.
Yeah, Calvin does a good job getting me all depressed.
Oh, well, you should look forward to game four when it's a potential sweep because it's you and Calvin on the post-game show for that one. You're
oh,
the lead
cool.
host for that one, my friend. And you can't blame me for that scheduling because you did it yourself.
But you're back next year, bro. I'm not continuing to do this. It's driving me crazy.
Okay,
right.
Yeah, you see how tough it is? Exactly.
I know how tough it is.
All right, Jill, so we appreciate the call. We'll talk to you
a
little later.
We'll
be hearing from Nick on Sunday after game four. He's going to be hosting with you, Calvin, so hopefully you guys get a little bit better game in that home game. Potentially at this point could be a sweep, depending on what they do in game three. Is there anything else you want to touch on tonight, bud?
I mean, you know, he hit on a lot of different things. Let's see. Let me take a quick look. Yeah, I guess back to his earlier point, I want to clarify my point about Isaiah Thomas. I'm not entirely critical of Isaiah on this. The only reason Isaiah gets singled out to me is because this team has very few ball handlers. I'll throw him and Evan Turner in there. I think that these guys need to do more to create offense for other guys. It'd be nice if Marcus Smart could do it. I'm just not sure that Marcus Smart is a point guard and that he can consistently – he just doesn't seem to have the court vision with the ball in his hand to keep finding guys. But I think Isaiah's got to find a way, be it like, you know, run some more pick and rolls. He's got to find a way to get other guys involved in the offense. And I know I didn't criticize him for going 4-15, which I could have. He missed a lot of shots, but, you know, that'll happen. He missed 6 threes or 5 threes, rather. I'm okay with that. I mean, not okay with it, but it'll happen. I just think that this offense looks so stagnant right now, and it's got to be Isaiah's responsibility to try to do something to get them going. That's all.
Yeah, I don't put it completely on him. I think the coaching staff has got to put some wrinkles in here or something, and maybe pull something out of the Brad Stevens bag of tricks that we've seen over the years, just random plays here and there throughout the regular season, winning games or just things that other teams weren't expecting. They need to find some movement, though. You're right, Calvin. They were very stagnant, and you can't just stand around and watch Isaiah try and get to the hoop, because guess what? The Hawks defenders are good enough to stop him when he gets there, regardless of who they put out there. Even Mike Scott has a decent chance of stopping Isaiah at the rim. So they got to find some way to get him the ball in a better spot and get him some chances for some assists and for some better shots. And if they don't do that, we're looking at a sweep. I hate to keep saying it because I'm going to be at both games, so I don't want to see a sweep. But it's the team needs to figure out a way to get points to score. The most simple aspect of the game, or the most simple concept of the game in general. You want to score more points than the opponent. They got to find a way to put the ball in the hoop. It's not working right now. Hopefully, game three brings that with a little luck from the home crowd. After that game at 10:30 p.m. or when the game ends, Patrick Gilroy and Bobby Manning are going to have you covered. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, Jared Weiss is going to be at the Garden, and he will be calling in with the Grandstand Celtics locker room report. So enjoy the game on Friday and enjoy the post game show as well. You won't be hearing from me again in the first round, but Calvin will be back on Sunday. And, of course, listen to Careless Whispers on Tuesday nights if you want to hear my lovely voice again. Calvin, great doing a post-game show with you again. If the Celtics find a way to get to the second round, I will talk to you guys then. If not, this is it for me on CLNS Radio post-game shows this year, unless I decide to call in after one of these games. We'll see. But, Calvin, nice talking to you tonight, man. I should call in? Yeah, maybe you and I can have a little battle after game four.
Let's do it. We'll find something to argue about.
All right. Sounds good to me. We'll see how that game goes. And as a host, this is it for me until the second round or until next season. So thank you all for listening. And we appreciate all the callers tonight. Let's hope that the Celtics put a better performance out there in games 3 and 4. And we have a lot more basketball to watch here in this postseason. Calvin, have a good night, man. And good luck on Sunday with Gelso.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Got it.